This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast, and here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hey guys, Tennis.com podcast here. Ed McGrogan here with Richard Pagliaro and Steve Tigner, the usual guest here these days. So the first week of play done in tennis, also some wild card NFL action as well, as we do like to discuss here and dabble in.
Keep that to a minimum today.
Yeah, I'm fine with that too, even... Even though Richard might be a little...
I'm a Jets fan, so I'm celebrating at least for the next 5 days, you know?
Yeah. Can they beat New England?
They can, or they can get blown out, so...
Those are the only two options.
Yeah, those are the two options.
Won't be a close loss.
Yeah, exactly.
We got that going on next weekend, and then next weekend, Sunday, here at Eastern Time, Australian Open will get underway, and we've had the warm-up tournaments that take place this week and last week. We had the first batch that ended this past weekend. There were five of them in all. Most of the big names were playing either in them or Hopman Cup, so most of the players were in action, and the biggest ones, you have to be sort of impressed with a few of them, even though Rafael Nadal, there's maybe some new questions raised about him at the moment. But I think we may as well start with the usual suspect of Roger Federer. Steve, in your piece today, I know you talk about the backhand. That was the big thing I took away as well from Federer's two wins in particular over Tsonga in the semifinals and Davidenko in the final. It seemed like the Federer that we saw, I think, at the French and Wimbledon last year, the unsurety of going to the slice so often with a backhand. But he's definitely going for a lot more of that shot now. It looks a lot more comfortable.
He's just hitting it better. I think that's what you can say. He's hitting the cross court like almost as if he's never hit it before, sort of like with more of a weapon than it has been. He's going down the line whenever he seems to feel like it. It almost seems like he's taking the ball earlier. It reminds me a little of Sampras's backhand when it was good, when it was in like 94, 95, when it was really a weapon, sort of heavy topspin. Federer's is different, but it has that feel. I mean, you couldn't really go to Sampras's backhand in those days and get very far. So that was big. I mean, just the way that Federer is playing, it seems like a little different, a little cleaned up. He's more efficient, doesn't go for quite as much on the forehand, but it's not like he's playing it safe either. And the same's true for the serve. Like, he's not hitting as many aces, but he's holding pretty easily. It seems like he's in more control. It's almost like Anacone has just reined his game in a little bit, but he's still while keeping the shot making.
Yeah, Anacone's got, I think, getting a lot of credit for this, deservedly so. Richard, what did you think about, I guess, Federer, and I guess what do you think about his prospects for next week? Of course,
he looks really fresh, and I think, like Steve said, the backhand, he blistered a few backhands up the line where, you know, he used to get into that pattern and sort of chipping it short and putting you in an uncomfortable position and making you come up with something to beat him. Now it looks like he's just going out there saying, when I'm feeling the ball, I can basically just tee off. Yeah. Not that he's trying to end points prematurely or anything, but when he has the shot, there's no hesitation. He's going after the shot.
Yeah, the backhand, I thought, too, it's like he, he's hitting it well, but it still seemed to have that little element of surprise in a way, too, he knows it's coming, of course, but even myself watching, I didn't expect some of them to to be let loose like that, right. And really the opponents didn't either for a
and
while.
Even on the return, once in a while, he'll crack one, whereas he got into that pattern, hey, I'm just going to chip it back, get into the point, and then let's go on those terms. Now you'll see him once in a while crack the return, and that, and God, the second serve on Davidenko, he was really going after the second serve return.
Yeah, Davidenko was, I thought for a while, sort of in his winter form, sort of the catching yeah. Catching everything down. I mean, he looked good at I thought he played a good second set in that match, but I mean, no one was beating. Didn't look like anybody was beating Federer.
Yeah,
on
he started
that
slow.
Day.
Started too slowly, I think. But yeah. After the match, I think he said that it's the best Federer's ever played against him. They've played about 20 times.
Yeah, and he's lost about 19 or 18.
And he did wipe away some of those points early. I mean, he did hang tough that end of that first set where he didn't go away. You know, he really did hang. He hung in there.
Yeah, yeah. Brisbane, or what's before we go to that? That was the other match I know that's on. Is I just want to touch on Nadal a little bit because, do you guys think there's any credence to this, like, you know, playing like too much of this exhibition stuff, and there's Nadal's playing doubles too in Doha.
It's a lot. It's more than he's played.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't know what you think of if it doesn't matter what kind of tennis it is, it's still tennis and it still adds up mileage. But you know, that's not a good sign, regardless that he's or if it's just, you know, this sort of random flu injury.
I would say it is. It is random, and it's just he was sick. But at the same time, it is more than he's played, a little more than he's played normally. And he didn't have any break after the World. He had a break before the World Tour final, but he didn't have anything. He didn't have any official off season. He said it was about 3 days. And, you know, that's going to catch up to you in some way. I don't know if it's related in this case, but I could see that kind of schedule catching up with Nadal eventually.
I guess we'll see too, if, you know, Nadal hasn't had a, this, I thought 2010 was Nadal's first fall season where I think he played for the most part a full schedule. He got pretty much to the later rounds of almost every event he played. And so he has a lot, you know, just a lot of matches at that point. And obviously there's very little turnaround from year to year. So, but saying that, it's, you know, it's foolish to even surmise that Nadal's to be counted out by any means or something.
Strange situation. He almost retired in the singles match against Davidenko, but then he stuck around to win the doubles. So it's hard to tell what he's feeling and how sick he was or is. He's you know, he delayed going to Melbourne for a day, but I would assume by the weekend it'll be normal for him.
Yeah, I hope he would be healthy. You just wonder the heat there, if he had to go out early and it's really extremely hot, just the hydration, and you know, you lose fluid when you have the flu, but I would think he would be, you know, fit and in form, yeah. I would hope for Australia.
Yeah. In Australia, that was played in the Middle East. In Australia, there was Soderling, Rod, a couple other, most of the rest of the big names there. And we were talking a little bit about Brisbane before this podcast got underway. Richard, you're mentioning about Soderling and the, you know, another guy that's kind of, when he's on, it's really kind of good night.
He almost takes the racket right out of your hand. I mean, the serve was monstrous. I mean, Roddick didn't get a sniff at a break point. I think he had, 10 break points against Roddick. And even the previous match, Stepanek broke him once. That was the only time he's broken the whole tournament, you know. So he goes through every match straight set. If he serves like that in Australia, I know he's done nothing for his career in Australia, but he's a different Soderling now. I mean, if he serves like that, it's just like 1-2 tennis, because you get it back, and then the next, if you get it back, the next shot, it's, oh, I mean, the guy is just a mammoth hitter of the ball.
Yeah, Roddick said that was the difference, really, was the serve. And Soderling's serve was as good as he's seen it. The other thing I thought was interesting or different about Soderling, he seemed more upbeat, more positive, more sort of proactive about you know, keeping himself pumped up during the match. You don't normally see that from him. He's more either stoic or sort of scowling. But this he seemed a little more just positive in general. He's a new coach, and
maybe that Paris Masters win did a little bit for him too. I mean,
it could be. He does seem like he's.
That was sort of a breakthrough win, I feel, for him in a way, even though he's been to Slam Finals, but, you know.
He does seem like he he was more, he was like, all right, this is my tournament, this is my match. You know, now he's ranked number four, he's ahead of Murray, so it feels like, you know, he thinks he belongs there.
Yeah, and even when they had the rain, the little bit of a situation where Roddick and Fergus sort of, you know, Roddick, a little sarcasm there, it didn't, nothing fazed him. Like, he was just,
he
had that look like, I'm going to get it done if I have to wait 5 minutes or, you know, 5 hours. He was just had a lot of conviction the way he played, the way, and his demeanor, like you said.
Yeah, and you brought up the number four ranking there. That's going to enable him to miss everybody aside from Murray, who dips down one spot, and he, you know, that should be a really big thing. Soderling seems to always sort of collide in the with a Federer in a quarterfinal, right, or something,
right.
Or he's always there. It seems
either
like for
Federer
the past
Nadal,
two,
right? Really.
Yeah,
the Open, Wimbledon, French. But then Murray, you know, who knows whether this will help Murray? The same thing happened to him last year, and he beat Nadal in the quarters and made the final. So maybe a little less pressure for Murray.
I would be interested this time if he did get Federer again, because after he beat him in Paris, remember, they played again at the U.S. Open, and everyone thought it would be a better match than it was, and he went back into that mode where he kind of defers to Federer, like, I guess I would defer too if I lost 12 times in a row to somebody, but it was not quite as a feisty Soderling as I thought we'd see in New York. Now that he's, like you said, won Paris, he's won Brisbane, maybe it would be a little bit different, at least psychologically, emotional. I mean, Federer's just a better player, better all-around game, but maybe the belief would be a little more fiercer if he did play him this time around.
Yeah, it's a big opportunity for him, for sure. Let's close talking about one match that happened this week already. And I guess we're talking about the Australian Open, and there couldn't be a more dangerous unseeded player to draw in round one than Juan Martín Del Potro, because someone... maybe even one of the big seeds could be, you know, faced with having to play him in the first round. It's sort of like what you saw from Ennen last year at the Aussie Open. So Del Potro today, whenever time it happened, sometime in the evening, he goes in Sydney and plays Feliciano Lopez, wins 6-7, 7-6, 7-6, saves a match point. The form of him is going to be determined. I didn't see any of the match, but, you know, Del Potro at the Aussie is going to be one of those more interesting subplots to see where that kind of goes.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, it's impossible to say. I wouldn't expect too much out of him, especially if he keeps playing matches like this week, because it's going to be obviously really hot down there, and he hasn't played any. He came back for a little bit and had some physical problems later last year. But, you know, nobody's going to want to face him, that's for sure.
Yeah. He's frightening, that guy. I think you're right, because he hasn't played in so long. But let's say he gets a few matches this week going in, and if he somehow snuck in a couple earlier, like you said, he could draw anybody. But if he got a couple early rounds that were manageable, then he gets his confidence, his form, he gets a little bit on a roll, then the guy's lethal if he's on his game. He's frightening.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. I should mention the podcast, the schedule going forward is Steve will be down in Melbourne a couple days, and the plan is to have some late night chats after each day's action. So
that's before or after the Fosters.
I don't know, ask Steve. They don't. Fosters is more prevalent down there, that's for sure. But
we'll see.
Yeah, depends if they serve in the press room. Who knows? I don't know. But Steve and I will be trying to do some daily podcasts from down there. And then up here, you should expect a lot of video from Richard, Pete, you know, and of course, day and night coverage from all of us here at tennis.com. So tune in, make sure you do, and thanks for listening.
You've been enjoying tennis.com's weekly podcast. Thanks for listening. For all the latest news and events, head over to tennis.com.